She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And trust me when I say we're going to give you some really fun, exciting, and very intentional things to think about today. Talking about one of my favorite topics since I started Mrs. Green's World, water. And just a brief word about how our show was made possible today. It's to the generous support of Habitat for Humanity Tucson. Their goal is to build safe, decent, affordable, quality homes for people in need, and what a great job they are doing at that. I've been a part of many home builds. You can learn more about them by visiting their website at habitattucson.org. And if you're not in Tucson, for all of our national listeners, visit habitat.org to find out about supporting Habitat for Humanity in your community. They are over-the-top awesome. So everybody, get ready. Get ready. Can you hear me and feel me smiling? I am really excited about this show. It's really funny. Let me just press pause and I'm breathless. But Scott Harrison is our guest. And Scott, I just want to tell you that probably within 6 months of starting Mrs. Green's World, someone connected me with Charity Water. And I started being part of the birthday campaign. So it's 8 years later.
Oh, how cool. I know.
It's a very cool story. And of course, we're going to give a little shout out to our I worship at the shrine of Seth Godin. He's a friend.
Yes.
And you're the reason I got him on my show. So I'll tell that story. But let me go back to what I want to say. And just, I know when people like you are on the show, you don't want me to make it all about you, but all about the mission. But I have to give people a sense for who you are and the big yes that you are living in the world for all of us. So thank you for taking the time and just suffer through the introduction, okay? Because it's it's compelling and inspirational, and I want to give people a snapshot. So you spent almost 10 years as a nightclub promoter in New York City, before leaving to volunteer at a hospital ship off the coast of Liberia. Talk about trading places. I mean, it was like, what? West Africa, you were volunteer as a photojournalist. And then when you came home to New York City 2 years later, you started the nonprofit organization Charity Water in 2006, turning your full attention to the global water crisis and the world's 800 million people without access to clean water to drink. You created public installations and innovative online fun, and I call them fun and fundraising platforms because you make giving fun, to spread international awareness of this issue. In 8 years, with the help of more than 500,000 donors worldwide, Charity Water has raised over $180 million. It's probably more than that now, and funded over 16,000 water projects in 25 countries. When these projects are completed, they will provide over 5.2 million people with clean, safe drinking water, something we all take for granted each and every day. So, Scott, there's my breathless intro, and the rest of the show will make it all about you.
No, we'll make it all about everybody else.
Yeah, we'll make it all about, truly, that's how you show up in the world, about making a difference. And I think it's important. It was, 8 years ago, I don't even think I ever heard of environmental disease, but it really was a critical part of your journey and circling back. And do you mind sharing how that impact of your mother getting sick and getting severe environmental disease shaped your journey?
Sure. Yeah, so when I was about four, this terrible tragedy happened in my family. We had moved from Philadelphia to the suburbs and into this energy-efficient house, which would be a good thing unless there was a carbon monoxide leak in the house, and there was. So the gas company had installed a faulty furnace with these pinhole cracks, and carbon monoxide was just leaking out into the house. And, you know, as a four-year-old, I was spending as little time in the house as possible and at school playing with my friends. My dad was commuting long hours and working at a new job at the time. So that really left my mom to bear the brunt of this exposure as she was fixing up the house. And on New Year's Day, when I was four, so yeah, what, 36 years ago, she walked across the bedroom, my parents' bedroom, and she collapsed on the floor, unconscious. And after a long series of blood tests, they found these massive amounts of carboxyhemoglobin or carbon monoxide in her bloodstream. And thankfully, it didn't kill her, but her immune system died in that moment. And she was really never the same again. And, you know, she went from this healthy, vibrant, super mom, great wife, to just an invalid, completely debilitated by pretty much anything chemical. So, you know, to give you an example of that, soap would make her sick. And,
right.
You know, if my dad and I wanted to be anywhere near her, we would have to wash our clothes, you know, 10 times in baking soda. We prepared a special room for her. So we moved houses to get to better air and prepared a special room for her that was covered in tinfoil. And she slept on an army cot that had been washed probably 30 times with baking soda and Ivory soap. And I remember mom was so sensitive that she couldn't even read anymore because the ink from books would make her sick.
Right.
So my dad and I would throw these books as an experiment into the oven and try to bake out the smell of the ink. And then my mom would wear these cotton gloves, and she was always wearing charcoal masks. And she would put our charred book, or, you know, slightly charred book, into a cellophane bag and wrap it up and then try to read. So it was a really bizarre childhood. And of course, some people thought she was crazy.
Right.
I remember once as a child, you know, thinking at times that mom was just trying to rain on my parade. And, you know, I had to do a lot of the cooking and the cleaning and was an only child. Family planning had stopped after this accident. So, you know, I wanted to be normal, and I wanted my mom to be normal. I remember once thinking that, this is surely in her head because she said that the radio made her sick. And, you know, surely mom just didn't want me listening to the radio. So one night after she went to sleep, I put the radio outside her bathroom door and I just turned down the volume so she wouldn't actually know that it was on. And sure enough, you know, she woke up in the morning, you know, feeling really terrible and getting the exposure to those electromagnetic radio waves. And I remember just as a kid, that kind of solidified it for me. This was real. And, you know, the rest of her life was just kind of lived trying to avoid exposure to all these things that, you know, normal people don't even think about every day.
And we didn't know then what we know now. I mean, I've interviewed guests that have started incredible movements, have started companies that really sell products that are toxin-free. It's just not easy even now, but we know so much more. So to have that happen to you in the early days of what is environmental disease, nobody even heard of it, must have been. I mean, talk about transformation and look what you and others have helped to do with it. That's what I think is part of the incredible power of the story. I mean, it took a while to circle back, but you did. And then what about... you know, you went from what I struggled with this interview was like it could be 3 hours because there are so many little doors I want to open that lead to other doors that lead to other doors. But What took you from what you call, I loved how you talked about your, you know, spiritual, I think it was spiritual bankruptcy. You were the hot, hip, happening New York City guy that was on every scene partying. And then your transformation to someone who literally put charity on. I loved that when I read about that. You wear charity and wear it proudly to this day. What hit you up the side of the head that made you just say, this is not working for me. I've got to find something else to do.
Sure. Well, you know, I grew up in a with a faith story. So my parents were just Christians, non-denominational, and really saw their... saw how important their authentic faith was to their relationship and really keeping our family together. They decided not to sue the gas company for negligence, even though they could have made a lot of money.
Right.
Just they didn't want to be bitter, and it was actually an accident. So I had grown up super active in the church, you know, playing by all the rules, and then at 18, this utter sheer act of rebellion. I lose the plot, and I moved to New York City, and I decide that I'm going to rebel in style, and I'm going to become a nightclub promoter, and I'm going to get people drunk for a living. So I spend the next 10 years, you know, going from this this kid playing by all the rules and the church kid to just a completely dark and debaucherous life, and you know, become one of the prominent nightclub promoters on the scene in New York City. And yeah, a typical night would look like a dinner at 10 p.m. and the club at 12, and then some, you know, disgusting after hours at 5 in the morning. And, you know, we might get home at noon, you know, wasted off of our face while other people are going to lunch breaks. So it actually looks like a glamorous life.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like a pretty glamorous life, and my, you know, my girlfriend was in magazines, and I had a BMW and a Rolex at the time, and, you know, a nice piano in my New York City apartment, and, you know, so many of the things I thought I had wanted or things that would make me happy. And, you know, after 10 years in the business, after doing, you know, all of the things I said I would never do, I just kind of came to terms with my moral, spiritual bankruptcy, and began praying again. I began reading theology. I began to kind of rediscover a very lost Christian faith. And you know, I remember being really repelled by some of the hypocrisy I saw growing up. But I also was really repelled by my selfish lifestyle.
Right.
I realized that my legacy, if I continued down this path, I was just going to be the guy that got a million people drunk, or 5 million people drunk, and only lived for myself. So I do some soul searching. It takes me about, you know, 4, 5, 6 months after this New Year's Eve vacation to South America, where I start reading the Bible again and start questioning my values. And I wind up just making a pretty extreme break and selling all my possessions. Made this, I rented a cobalt blue Ford Mustang and headed north with no destination in mind, and grabbed a Bible. I grabbed a bottle of Dewars, and I wound up in Maine on Moosehead Lake in a dial-up internet cafe, and I made this deal with God that I was going to give one of the 10 years that I had selfishly wasted, and I was going to go and try and serve him with integrity, and I was going to try and serve the poor, which felt like the opposite of my life.
Right.
So from this dial-up net cafe, I start applying to the famous humanitarian organizations. However, I am a nightclub promoter, so they all deny me. So now that I am ready after 10 years to turn my life around, I didn't even want to be paid for this. No one will take me. So I was really discouraged. I went to the south of France to just kind of wait as these rejection letters started rolling in at a friend's house. And finally, I got a break. One organization said that if I was willing to pay them about $500 a month, I could volunteer. And I would have to go to a country called Liberia that had just come out of a 14-year civil war.
No kidding.
So I said, great, here's the credit card details. I'll go anywhere. Thank you for taking me. And, you know, my life changed in a pretty radical way, you know, going from a nice apartment to a country with no electricity, no running water, no sewage, no mail, and being surrounded by these extraordinary doctors, humanitarian doctors, who were operating for free on the poor. And it kind of started the second decade or the second chapter of my life.
And there is the journey of, you know, it's so much more than soul searching. And I always liken my life to, we think that we're in charge, but we're really all pieces on the chessboard, and the higher power is directing us. So it's like, just listen a little harder. So, of course, the big question then becomes, as part of this journey, and you can fill in the blanks because we do have an hour, but why water? I mean, I know.
Yeah, sure.
How many kids die every day? Still, 4,000 kids a day, at least, that we count, die from waterborne diseases. I mean, it's unbelievable. But why water? What moved you to charity water?
Yeah, it's a great question. So, 10 years, if I kind of do it, the recap, 18 years playing by the rules, helping
right.
take care of mom in a caregiver role, 10 years of
Party Central.
Rebellion. Party Central, you got it. And then at 28 years old, I joined this humanitarian mission. So that was 28 to 30. So that 1 year turned into 2 years. And I was primarily with doctors. I was on a medical ship. And we would sail this giant hospital ship into a port, and there would be thousands of people waiting. To give you just a picture of healthcare in Liberia at the time, there was one doctor for every 50,000 citizens.
Oh, my God.
Here in this country, we have a doctor for about 180 of us. So if you got sick in this country, you were out of luck. So thousands of people would come and see our doctors. So I was looking at this through a medical lens, and oh, my gosh, there's just so many more sick people than we can treat, than we have the resources at the time. However, then I started spending time in the rural areas, going into the villages, and I saw people drinking from swamps. I saw that the people of Liberia didn't have their most basic health need met, and kind of just put those two and two together. You know, there's thousands of people turning up to see our doctors, but more than half of the country doesn't have clean water. I mean, how could you ever be healthy if you had to drink from a fetid swamp or a viscous, brown, murky river? If your water had leeches in it, if it contained disease and parasites. So that's really how I got to water was, you know, I'm with these doctors. I'm working as a volunteer in a hospital ship. But, you know, we're putting a Band-Aid on. The bigger problem here is the question behind the question of so much of this. The sickness and disease, which is the lack of access to clean water. And, you know, just to give you the global statistic today, if you look at all of the developing world, you know, throughout Africa and India, Asia, Central and South America, 56% of all disease is water related.
Yes.
Because of bad water. So just imagine that. You'd knock out half of the disease facing the poor just by making sure that people had clean water and sanitation. So that's how I got there, was really through medicine, through doctors, and wanting to go and work on the root cause of some of that sickness.
And
so after the 2 years with Mercy Ships, I came back with the idea to start Charity Water at 30 years old.
And I, you know, excuse me, but baby, look at you now. So I have to ask you this, and I'm so glad that I remembered. The name is unique in the way that you, I'm sure, intentionally chose it. It's small C, it's colon, and it's water. And every time I was typing it and getting ready for the show, I would go back because I didn't want to type it with a capital C, and I didn't want to type it with a capital W, because
sure.
All of that matters. Is there something that you can share with us about that? It's been intriguing to me for 7.5 years.
Well, I don't know about the lowercase as much. I think I just, I like minimalism.
The simplicity of it?
About the colon. You know, the colon, when I first started, and a lot of people don't really know this. They look at us from the outside as just as a water organization or a water charity. But when I started, I really wanted to reinvent charity. I wanted to reinvent the way people thought about giving. And I wanted to move more people towards generosity and compassion. And in some ways, maybe share my redemption story a little bit. They didn't need to share my faith, but I believe that service and caring about others and empathy and compassion, more of that was needed in the world. And I had also seen that a lot of people didn't trust charities. Charity had felt broken
yep.
to so many people. They would talk about the black holes of giving and where does my money go and, you know, ineptly run organizations. And I really thought there was an opportunity to do something very different. I would need one issue to start, but there could potentially be many issues. So the reason for the colon was perhaps one day there would be charity shelter or charity education or charity vision.
Got it.
Or charity health. And, you know, we have this unique business model that was part of the vision from the beginning, where I thought if you were really going to reinvent charity, if you're going to bring these disenchanted people back to the table, you would really need to deal with the money problem and the objections around money. So from day one, we said we will always use 100% of the money to directly fund water projects. We will never, the public will never pay for overhead. They'll never pay for the staff costs or the operations or
okay, we've got to take our first break. So hold that thought. To me, it's like, okay, we've been on 5 minutes. When we come back, more about redefining charity. Scott Harrison, CEO and founder of Charity Water. Please stay here with me. Lots more great stuff to share.
Join us for a new Mrs. Green's World episode every Saturday at 12 noon Pacific time at MrsGreensWorld.com. All of our past shows are available as on-demand podcasts at MrsGreensWorld.com. Listen on your computer or mobile device using the iHeartRadio app. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. We are a proud member of the Dream Vision 7, Glimmerglass, Green Radio Divas, Blog Talk, and Speak Up Radio Networks. If you have questions or comments about the show, write to us at info@MrsGreensWorld.com. We'd love to hear from you. And now, more with Mrs. Green.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And today we're inviting you to think about water. The name of our show today is Charity Water. Joining us for this hour is Scott Harrison, the founder and CEO of Charity Water, a nonprofit organization bringing clean and safe drinking water to people in developing nations. And just a reminder, in 8 years, with the help of more than 500,000 donors worldwide, Charity Water has raised over $180 million and funded over 16,000 water projects in 25 countries, and all of the ripple effect that goes with that. When completed, their projects will provide over 5.2 million people with clean, safe drinking water. Scott, thanks again for being with us to share your very important journey. And we were talking about... It's just so much fun, and there's so many more questions I have. So at the beginning days and redefining charity. So you're, you know, the ripe old age of 30, and you want to make a difference by what I call literally going upstream. To me, it's a metaphor. When there's streams are polluted, you don't pick the dead fish out. You go up to find the cause, and you were looking at the cause for all of these incredibly debilitating, devastating diseases that are all related to clean water. So talk about the early years and how you wanted to redefine charity as well.
Yeah, well, as I mentioned, you know, the biggest problem so many people have with charity is just not understanding where the money goes and how much of their money will actually reach those in need. So I thought we could have a new business model where instead of it all going into one giant pot, we would have two separate pots. And there would be the public pot where every single penny of every donation could be used on the direct programs, in this case our water projects. And then there would be another smaller bank account where we would find a very small group of visionary investors who would fund the overhead costs. And we would treat them like investors and like shareholders. And they would know exactly what they'd get. So that was idea number one. Idea number two was just to use the technology available of the day to actually connect people to the impact. So we were going to be funding a variety of different water projects all around the world. We could put them all up on Google Earth and Google Maps. So if you were able to, you know, write a $10,000 check and give an entire village clean water, you'd get to see actual proof photos. You'd get to see the GPS coordinates and be able to just know that that actually existed. So this was kind of simple stuff, but it just wasn't being done. So I was really, really excited about that. And then I think probably the most important thing about the business model really was what we wouldn't do. And we wouldn't send Westerners, well-intentioned Westerners from America over to Africa
to fix it.
India or to Asia to dig wells or to build rainwater harvesting systems. We would go and identify the local partners and we would grow their organizations. So we would employ locals, and we just believe for work to be sustainable, it must be carried out in a local context and not with foreigners. So our group would be finding, our group's job here in New York would be finding these amazing local partners, building their capacity, vetting them, auditing, you know, making sure the money was being spent well, but really empowering them to lead their own people forward. So that was the model. Give away 100%, throw up all these water projects on Google Earth and Google Maps, and then use a network of local partners, which was, you know, contextually appropriate. So we started about 9 years ago by throwing a party. So I in some ways, I think I wanted to redeem the skill that I had learned, and I got about 700 people to turn up at my birthday party, and I charged them all $20 to come. But this time, instead of pocketing the $15,000, we took every single penny, and we did our first few water projects in Uganda.
What a launch. I mean, what a launch. My kingdom to have been at that launch. It's just, it's where a big dream was really not just born, but put into action. And, you know, I just another little bit about water that I don't think we should gloss over. It does impact people's health. Yes, it does. But it also, it's the source of life. It helps with income and education. It helps women and kids because they are so busy going to get the water. So it to me, it's such an integrated thought about what water really does mean in our lives. I mean, it has a ripple effect that, you know, health, sanitation, all of those things are because people do or do not have access to clean water. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, there's just nothing. There's no close second if you ask me. So let's take a little bit of time and talk about some of the projects. I want to talk about the projects and some of the things you funded, and you don't start them. I think that's important. Like you said, you clarified that it's for existing projects. You went in and found things that were started or that needed starting and helped communities do what was best for them. So talk about some of the projects. I love to hear what you're doing.
Sure. Well, you know, a little bit on the issue, right? So the places that we're working, we've decided to focus on people living rurally. So there are about 663 million people right now that are living around the world without access to clean water. And about eight out of nine of them are living in rural villages. So that means not in the cities, not in the big towns, but so many of them just living off the land, subsistence farmers, the land of their parents and the land of their grandparents. And they would be, they'd be obviously drinking clean water, or they'd be drinking water, it's just not clean. So the sources would be swamps, ponds, rivers, open springs. And what we're able to do, so that's the focus area. In many of these communities, the women might be walking 8 hours a day. And I know that sounds exaggerated.
No, but it's not.
It's really true.
It's so true.
In some cases, women are walking 2 days, and they're actually staying overnight at the water hole. They're worried about being attacked by hyenas. They're worried about being raped sometimes by strangers. So it's really severe out there. I mean, I've been to Ethiopia 26 times over the last 9 years of charity water. And, you know, I lived in a village last year where a 13-year-old girl hung herself because she spilled her water after an 8-hour journey. And she didn't want to go back and get more water. And she, you know, tied a rope around her neck and hung herself from a tree in the middle of the village. So it is really an emergency. And I know it's so difficult to get your head around 663 million anything. Let alone people, you know, living in a different context without water. But it means long walks. It means sickness. It means diarrhea. It means, as a mother, I was in Niger last year in the Western Sahel Desert, and you know this extraordinary woman, Aisha, who was getting water from this nasty, nasty source, told me that she lost 8 out of her 10 children. They all died at different ages. She rattled off their names, rattled off their ages, didn't know actually the cause of disease for all of them. Some certainly water, considering the source that she was giving her kids. But so that's kind of the context that we're working in, real tragic situations, you know, people with real names and hopes and fears and dreams, but really born into just pretty horrible conditions. So what we're able to do is, you know, we're solution agnostic. So we go in and we just try to find through our local partners the appropriate response for that community. So in the Western Sahel, we were drilling wells. and also drilling wells at schools. So when we work at a school, we need to make sure we're not just bringing clean water to the school, we're also bringing toilets to the school. Because the teenage girls, when they hit puberty, will drop out of school because they're ashamed to attend. You know, they get their period, and you're not going to go to a school with no water and no toilet. So 4 or 5 days out a month, you know, they fall behind in their studies. And
right.
Then, culturally, they say, you women should be walking for water or for firewood anyway. So that's kind of the context that we're living in. And then we go and we fund sometimes wells, sometimes spring protections. Sometimes there's groundwater. Sometimes there's rainwater. Sometimes we can build filtration systems and take existing dirty water and make it clean. So whatever is the right solution for that. And then you get this beautiful after story, and you see unbelievable impacts of clean water. Water impacts health, water impacts education, water impacts the local economy. There was a paper that came out of the United Nations finding that every dollar invested in water and toilets yielded $4 to $8 to the local economy. So imagine investing a dollar in making that community $4 to $8 richer, or $1 million, and getting a $4 to $8 million return. So water is this wonderful thing that really does impact the lives of so many communities. And you know, it's an extraordinary moment to see water shooting out of the ground as well.
I can't even imagine. Really,
you know, there are parties and dancing and clapping and singing, and you know, it's an incredibly joyful experience. So it never gets old. You know, I've been a part of many of those celebrations, and it's just an amazing thing to be a part of, and to be able to provide, you know, the most basic need. And look, the way I look at it is, you know, I didn't choose to be born into a middle-class family in Philadelphia. You know,
right.
I didn't choose for my mom to get sick.
Right.
Aisha didn't choose to be born in the middle of the Sahel Desert in a place where 8 of her children would die. Because of the lack of food and the lack of clean water. So in that, you know, I and you know, the supporters of our community are able to use our position of influence, of affluence, certainly relatively to the 660 million people, it should be a real blessing. And you know, I guess I don't look at it as much as, you know, we never try to guilt or shame people. So less of an obligation, but more of an amazing opportunity. You know, and wonderful what you've done with your birthday. You know, you've been able to spread awareness, and you've been able to help people get clean water just by telling the story. So
I don't
really
need more stuff.
Invite people into it.
Yeah,
you don't need more stuff, right?
Need more stuff. But
that's his birthday idea. You know, it's
so great. So tell people what the birthday idea is. Now, I sometimes assume people know. So what's the birthday idea?
So we basically said, okay, here's our problem, 600 million people living out there without clean water. We have this other problem here in the Western world where we just buy too much crap.
Right.
And, you know,
simply
there's $100 billion spent on gift cards every year. $10 billion goes unused. I mean, we have a culture of just buying things. And we thought, what if we could reposition the birthday instead of making it about us getting stuff, instead about my birthday being about me and my party and my gifts? What if we could turn our birthdays into generous moments? What if we could make them about others and say, look, don't buy me a tie or a wallet or a pair of shoes or an Amazon gift card. Donate my age in dollars, and every penny will go to help people get clean water. And we thought this age in dollars idea was interesting because if you're a six-year-old, your peers, your six-year-old friends have $6 that they can
right.
donate.
Yes.
And if you're 65 years old, you know people that can make a $65 donation. And it's also personal to you. So we have put this idea out there, and people have raised over $20 million now with their birthdays and raised a whole lot of awareness. So that's a simple thing everybody listening could do. We built a pretty great system online now that tracks the donations, where not only you, but even the people giving a dollar or your age in dollars, or you know, your age in dollars times 10, can see exactly where their money went. And if people are interested in checking that out, you could just go to charitywater.org/birthdays, charitywater.org/birthdays, and you can pledge even if it's a year from now. And then a month before your birthday, we just send you a simple reminder and the instructions for how to be successful. So thank you so much for doing your birthday. I think I've done 7 or 8 now myself, and it's just a blast.
And I remember the first time one of my girlfriends gave me the gift as well. It was like, oh my gosh, not just for me. And it was lighting up because, you know, there's all these things now that I'm Mrs. Green about. There's no packaging. There's no wrapping paper that gets thrown in the landfill. I mean, the beat goes on. I don't need any more stuff. Certainly at the ripe old young age of 64, it's like, I don't need any more stuff, period, end of story. So give these gifts. But it's a perfect segue when you said we don't guilt trip people. You so don't guilt trip people. Your website is fun and it brings people in and it's easy to navigate and it's inspirational. So talk about, I love some of the campaigns. People are so creative. And to me, I want to ask you 2 things. Is that part of your intention for redefining charity? Because it is different. And what are some of the things that people have done? If anybody wants to go and look, it's on their homepage. How do you collect? You can collect spare change. You can start your own, grow a mustache. I mean, there are so many things. So tell us about some of the fun things that people have done using their own creativity. It doesn't feel like charity. It's fun.
Sure.
That was a long question, I know, but I'm really excited.
No, it's great. So birthdays is one way that people, you know, that we really, everybody could do that. Everybody
right.
could donate one birthday for clean water and give up gifts and involve their friends and family in a fundraising campaign. But some people said, look, I don't want to wait till my birthday. I want to do something about this right now. And we've had skydivers for Charity Water. We have had meditation communities in Australia for Charity Water. We have had people swim from Alcatraz to San Francisco. We have had people run across the Sahara. We have someone that just placed 4th in the Nathan's hot dog eating contest for Charity Water. We have kids that are selling their toys for $20 donations. We have a guy in San Diego right now who is making custom pancakes for $100 donations.
You're kidding
me. He's
done
Van Gogh's Starry Night. He's done Babe Ruth. He's done Edward Munch's The Scream.
Out of pancakes?
We have out of pancakes.
I did not see that one. Oh, my God.
On Instagram. And, you know, there was a guy named Ryan in the armed forces in Afghanistan. He was writing haikus, custom haikus, if people made a donation to his campaign. So we've just, there's a girl in Vancouver, a 6-year-old girl named Maddie, who's been selling lemonade. She did 12 lemonade stands in a row. And in her 12 lemonade stands, she got a local band to perform on her sidewalk to attract lemonade buyers. And she's now sold $5,300 of lemonade. So we just saw people bringing the best of themselves, their creativity, their passion, their generosity, their empathy, and said, look, you know, I refuse to be paralyzed by a statistic like this. 600 million people don't have clean water. I can help one person, or I can help 10 people, or I can help 100 people get clean water. And here's my idea, or here's my birthday, or here's my gift.
And making it theirs. I mean, that's what got me so excited. It's driving me crazy to try and think about what I will be able to do. I mean, you have people that all decided to jump in a swimming pool. I mean, the beat goes on and on. I will have to really look up the Pancake Dad because that blows me away.
He is amazing.
I will look him up and I'll start following him on Instagram. And, you know, while you were talking, it really is about redefining charity and having people participate in their own giving. And then there's the other side, which I think we should talk about when we come back, what $30 can do to make a difference in someone's life. We're not talking about, you know, there are the Seth Godins of the world, and he's got such a major following. He impacts my life every single day, and he can raise $60,000. But from what I feel about spending a lot of time researching, you care just as much about the $30 donor as you do about, you value the engagement and the awareness about water. So we can talk about that. And then I want to talk about how you pick projects, because you are in the mix. There are so many demands. And I'd like to just go inside a little bit more for you to share with us. How do you determine which projects you're going to fund, and what's kind of, you know, what kind of things are you looking at? What's the vetting process look like? And then I'm going to ask you have the time to think about this. I call it the crystal ball question. I always like to think about 5 years, 10 years down the road. And what about, like you said, it might be charity energy, it might be charity something else, about what happens when there is no water in many places throughout the world? And I'm talking no water. So everybody, stay here with us. I've got lots more questions, and Scott Harrison from Charity Water has lots more answers. Stay here to hear more about this incredible dream.
Mrs. Green's world's mission is to preserve the planet by creating a global community of people who care about the health of the Earth. We educate, inform, and inspire. Mrs. Green's World is an independent, non-political, agenda-free voice. Your generous gift enables all of us to explore the issues facing the health of the planet in a comprehensive way. As a Mrs. Green's World sustainer, you can assist us in offering trusted information, providing listeners with the tools to make their own conclusions and choose their own steps to create a healthier planet. Visit MrsGreensWorld.com and click on Become a Member today.
Welcome back, everybody, and thanks for joining us. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And thank you, Scott Harrison, for appearing on our show today to discuss the very important and impactful work of Charity Water, whose sole mission is to bring clean and safe drinking water to people in developing countries. So if you just joined us, Scott is the founder and CEO of Charity Water. And part of his story is that in 2004, he left his party scene life in New York for the shores of West Africa as a desperately unhappy human being, feeling as though he was faced with spiritual bankruptcy. It's such a critical part of this journey and what he's been willing to share. So Scott asked the question, what would the opposite of his life look like? And we are so fortunate to be able to hear about the path he chose and about how we can be a part of it and make a difference for the millions of people on the planet who don't have access to clean water, who can't flush the toilet, who don't just go and brush their teeth and leave the water running. So, and I like to add this piece because I think it's important. Scott's being recognized for his work, and it is for his work, not for making money. But he was recognized in Fortune magazine's 40 and under 40 list, the Forbes magazine Impact 30 list, and has been recognized as number 10 in Fast Company's 100 most creative people in business. And he's paying it forward by being a World Economic Forum Young Global Leader. So Scott, thank you. And let's get on with redefining charity, I think is where we left off. I get lost in the story of how important it is. And I do want to tell you, I cheated a little bit. I Googled the Pancake Dad when we were on break.
Ah, got it.
Everybody.
So you, good, right?
You've got to check it out. Like, you cannot flip and believe this. He has 11,600 followers on Instagram. And he says, let's change the world together. Click my profile to link your own custom pancake for your own custom pancake. 100% of the money goes to Charity Water, clean projects. So thank
you. He's made
you.
Hundreds and hundreds. I think he's raised $38,000 now.
Oh God, by making pancakes. So follow the Pancake Dad. His name is Brady Phelps. Let's give him a shout out on the show, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so how do you pick a project? That's where we were. I got distracted, but how do you vet? How do you decide?
Sure.
And who decides?
So we have a whole team. There's about 20 people here.
Okay.
At the organization in New York. And to give you a sense, we're about 80 people full-time in New York City. And then we employ about 1,600 people around the world that are actually working on these projects through our partners. So we would pay about 1,600 salaries, but have a very small team in New York making all this possible. So right. Of the 80 people here, about 20 people are just dedicated to vetting the partners, finding the partners, and then auditing the partners. So we really break it into two main categories. There's the quality of the work, the program quality, and there's the team that works on that. That would also include timelines. You know, if we're funding 100 water projects over a 12-month period, I'm trying to make sure they actually get done in that 12-month period. Then the other division here is really the program finance. And that's making sure that, you know, we're paying the appropriate costs and that we're being really good stewards of our donors' money. So, for instance, we might buy 10,000 bags of cement at $16. What that team does is they're going to make sure that cement actually costs $16 in country. They might go and through an audit actually test the procurement of some of those local supplies. So,
right.
You know, if cement only costs $10 and we're paying 16 times 10,000 bags, we'd have a problem. So I guess how we find the partners, we just have a lot of experience now, a decade, and you just know who the players are. And if people are really interested in that process, there's a kind of hidden website called partner.charitywater.org.
Okay.
And you can actually see the vetting criteria. And it takes about a year for us to qualify a partner, from the beginning to the end. And we'd worked in a total of 24 countries. Now we're active in 15. So we're actually going deeper with fewer partners in fewer countries. And in many of these countries, we have 100% coverage visions. So we're getting close to the state of Rulindo in Rwanda, being the first state to have 100% water coverage, getting close to the Chikwawa district in Malawi, being the first district in all of Malawi to have 100% water coverage. So when we're able to fund these partnerships long-term, you know, take a 3 to 5 year view, we're able to do some really exciting stuff.
And just, I mean, you talk about the, I talk about it as the ripple effect. You can talk about it of creating sustainable communities. When that phrase is thrown out, creating sustainable communities, what do you mean? It's not just water and access to clean water. How does water help create a truly sustainable community, which means they can get on, you know, they can provide their food, they can provide education. There's so many components to that. So what does it mean to you?
Yeah, I think we have to be careful about, you know, I don't want to oversell it too much, but
right.
Water, and one of the reasons why I haven't moved on to issue number two is because water is so rich. Water impacts health. Water impacts education.
Right.
Water impacts the local economy. Really, most importantly, water, or having water nearby, gives time back to the women and the children, and they can use that time to be productive and do other things. And some of them will start small businesses. They'll sell rice at the market, or they'll sell peanuts at the market. Some of them just use that time to be better moms and spend more time with their families. So it is making impacts in health, making impacts in education, and making impacts on growing these local economies. And water makes people healthier, and it also makes them wealthier.
And it's you know, it sounds like hyperbole, but to me it isn't. It's freedom. Like for some of
well,
the
it is. It's kind of common sense, right?
I mean, really
if you think
is.
About your life without water.
Without water, and you can't.
Today and walk 8 hours to then get dirty water that you're going to share with your family. I mean, your life's pretty miserable, right? You're not going to have time to do this podcast with me. Your kid's gonna have diarrhea tomorrow and not gonna go to school for 3 days, and then you're gonna have another child actually die of diarrhea, which is frustrating because they've just died of dehydration, and the way to cure diarrhea here is just to give kids clean water and to hydrate them. But you can't do that because you have to keep going back to the river and giving your kid the same water that killed them in the first place. So, you know, this stuff is it just is such common sense, right? Well, I think what's the injustice in the world is that 600 million people, simply because of where they're born, don't have access to this thing that so many of us take for granted our entire life. And that's what we're really working on and trying to right that wrong and inviting as many people to be a part of that as possible.
And your calls to action, I just want to underscore this because there's nothing heavy about this. There's something intentional, something impactful, and it can be so much fun. It's like some of these issues, after I get off shows, I'm like, okay, there is no hope. But when I talk about charity water to people, when I visit your site and learn about what you're doing, and there are other projects like that too, but it's like, let's make it fun. Let's make it cutting edge. Let's get our friends and family excited about, you know, whether it's philanthropy is the word you use, or giving back, or paying it forward, it doesn't matter. It's so exciting. So how does somebody start a campaign if they want to? If they want to get, they're going to swim the English Channel.
Sure.
How do they get started?
They would, well, if you, you know, if you, so kind of three simple ways to help. Everybody could do the birthday. So that's charitywater.org/birthdays.
Right.
To start a campaign, they would just go on charitywater.org and click start a campaign, and then you get to fill out your mission statement and bring all sorts of creativity and passion and craziness to it. The third, way, something we've really been working on building is a new monthly giving program. And just people that might be able to give $10 a month or $30 a month. It's about $30 to give someone access to clean water. And, that really helps us as building this community. We've got about 1,000 givers in that community. We'd like to take that to 10,000 and beyond. So, maybe there's some people listening that could give $50 a month or $60 and help two people. And that's just charitywater.org/monthly. Birthdays or creative fundraising campaigns. And some people said, I'm really busy. I don't want to ask anyone else for money. I'd like to just give and know that I'm making an impact every month and know that 100% of my money is actually going and that, they're smart people that are making sure that, my investment is having the highest impact that it can on human lives.
And how the money is spent. 100% of their money goes to
every penny.
The project.
Yeah, we even pay back credit card fees, which is kind of crazy. But, to give you an extreme example, if someone sponsored an entire water project on our website and gave $10,000 using their American Express, we actually only get about $9,700
right.
as the 3% comes out. But we put that money back. We raise it separately from our small group of overhead donors. We make that $10,000 gift whole. And we send every penny to the field. We do the same thing with a $10 gift or a $50 gift, paying back all of the credit card fees. So when we say 100%, we mean 100%.
It's unbelievable. It's just another part of redefining charity and the vision of keeping the people that wanted to fund the overhead and the operations, which is a real part of charities. I've been involved in them since I was, for 35 years. And there is that reality of a building and of the water working and the lights going on and the energy to heat or cool the building. So there is that reality that, I think people have to give credit to organizations that are transparent about it, but 100% of my money going to the project makes me feel great. So talk about the holidays. People are in the spirit of giving, and it's a time when I think people most consciously count their blessings. You have a holiday campaign. So talk about that. What's that?
We do.
Like?
We're actually about to launch a campaign called Who's at Your Table. And it's a simple way to honor the loved ones in your life by donating in their honor. And, we just thought about the holidays, right? People are going to gather together for Thanksgiving, for Hanukkah, for Christmas, and families are going to be together, and you might even have some loved ones that don't make it in. But there are families around the world that are going to be sitting down at tables without the most basic ingredient for the table, which is clean water.
Right.
And, no matter what food you eat, no matter what your family looks like, every table needs clean water. So we're really launching this simple idea, Who's at Your Table? Are there 10 people in your life that you want to honor? You could type in a donation. It could be as little as a dollar. It could be, $1,000. And you'll send that notification to those people saying, hey, I thought of you. I was thinking about generosity and the people that I love and honor in my life, and I wanted to give someone clean water on your behalf. And then it'll encourage them to consider paying it forward. So we might even get a little virality out of this. Imagine sending it to 10 people, even $10 each, and then five of them saying, oh, wow, I'm going to honor the loved ones in my life, and this kind of beautiful chain reaction going forward.
And there's so many layers to it to me, because I have grandchildren, and they are conscious about all these issues. I mean, one time a guest did not, there was a terrible accident, and I was live at the time, and I needed a guest. And I called my 13-year-old granddaughter, and she did an entire show with me about how she lives consciously in the planet. So we've got that.
Love it.
Imagine holidays where we used to sit, and my husband and I would be up till 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning wrapping presents and making sure, there was plenty under the tree. And then, I remember one time we gave our daughter something and she played with the box. She got in the box and that was like her favorite toy.
Yeah.
And
sure.
We have pictures of it. So to me, a layer of this is, as the grown-ups or as the adult, as the role model, what can we do to redefine charity and make it fun and put the focus on a global view? Because if you're not going to learn it at home, it's pretty tough to learn it. So to me, doing something like this, that we'll be talking about it in the Murphy Darling family about how to make this fun.
Oh, fantastic.
And who's at our table?
And kids, you know, kids are getting involved as well. We have a bunch of schools. We have a bunch of students. As I mentioned, you know, six-year-olds out there selling lemonade. There's a three-year-old named Cosette who is painting for Charity Water. She's raised over $5,000 painting.
And no
she has
way.
A backlog of people that want her paintings for Charity Water.
And she's
so,
three?
You know, she's 3 years old.
Oh, what a world. I mean, I used to ring the bell on the show. That's a big bell ringer. That and the pancake dude. I love the pancake.
I know.
Oh my gosh.
It's so fun.
Yeah, it is.
You
fun.
Really can do anything for clean water. I mean, we have this thing around here. Nothing is crazy.
Nothing
the
is
craziest
crazy.
Thing that you can do is nothing.
Okay. It's just, and it just, I kept saying fundraising. I'm purposely.
Fun is in fundraising.
Fun.
Right?
It's just keep the, just focus on that. It's really unbelievable. So I'm not even sure what I want to ask you as some of the last questions when we have about 4 minutes, but are there still surprises for you? Because to me, the magic of going back and visiting your website is to see the infinite number of creative ideas. You know, you talked about the three-year-old. Are there any other ones? I love hearing the stories. People that are part of Mrs. Green's world love hearing the stories. So three sounds like it might be the youngest. I'm going to be putting up on Twitter and Instagram the pancake dad. That's just unbelievable. And
that's,
I guess,
so fun, isn't it?
It is so fun. And my question goes back to when you started with an intention of redefining charity. Did you ever have a clue that this is all the places will go?
Well, you know, it's funny. I do get asked that question sometimes. And I think in some ways, the truthful answer is that I thought we would be more successful. I thought we would have helped more people. And look, 5.5 million people, it's a lot.
Wow.
You know, we're coming up on 1% of the problem. But, you know, come on, people need water. I mean, this is something that everybody could get involved in. So I think that's why we keep, you know, we keep inviting people into this and telling the story. And we've had about a million people add their story to ours. But, you know, I think we have really high expectations. We believe this problem can be solved in our lifetime. And, you know, we believe in a world where no one, simply because of where they're born, is dying of bad water, especially when we know how to do something about it.
And, you know, I'm involved with one of my sponsors it's the Chapman Automotive Group, and I'm doing a green team with them. And we raised a lot of money for LLS here in Tucson. And one of the things they did, one of the most successful, these are, you know, employees that live from paycheck to paycheck. They had a pie in the face contest for their boss. Mm. And he agreed to dress up in a tutu. The clean, you know, I mean, so it's like that made fun, put the fun in fundraising. So, you know, tap into creativity. And I guess the other thing I want to talk a little bit about is, you know, your role as a global leader for youth and what, you know, how important that is and how I like the expression paying it forward, how you're helping others to see what you're doing and be a role model for them. Do you want to end with that?
Sure. I mean, look, I think I think what I would hope, you know, I've been at this 10 years now. I think what I would just hope that my story says to people is you can have a lot of fun living a life that serves others. And, you know, we've raised almost $200 million now, and I live in a one-bedroom apartment, and I have a son, and he's in the closet at the moment. And you know, I don't have a car, and I don't have a Rolex watch, and I don't own a home, but we've been able to make, you know, 5.5 million other people's lives much, much richer by meeting their basic need and have a lot of fun doing it. And I've gotten to meet some extraordinary, interesting people and, you know, got on 96 airplanes a couple of years ago. So I've gotten to travel. I've gotten to see the impact of these lives change. But, you know, it's not all about money. It's not all about status and accumulation and wealth creation
and charity.
You
water.
Can live a life that
yes.
Yeah, you can live a life that helps create wealth for others.
and charitywater.org. That's the final word. Check it out and become a part of making a difference. Scott Harrison, thanks for showing up in Mrs. Green's World. Have a great week, everybody.
Thanks for having me.